This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackey and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Hello on this Monday. Coming down from our football high over the weekend, we got a lot of everything. We got Hall of Fame quarterbacks. We got a snow globe game.
Oh, God, loved it.
We had some drama here and there. Legendary coaches like Andy Reid. Some great stuff. Zach Taylor maybe emerging into that category at some point, too. No one gives that dude any credit, but wow. What they've built with the Bengals the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
So we did an hour-long Purple Daily episode today, too, so check that out. We dove into the three known Vikings defensive coordinator candidates and also the latest on can you win a Super Bowl paying one player a crap ton of money. And we went through that list of teams that are remaining. But this is a Statements Monday here on Mackey and Judd, daily Minnesota sports, entertainment, therapy, speculation, whatever you need from us. So, Judd, why don't you hit the breakfast ball here?
Oh, I love the breakfast ball.
Let it fly.
I love the breakfast ball.
You get a mulligan if you want to. That's the beauty of the breakfast ball.
My opening statement is this, and I say this with much chagrin because, again, just like on Wednesdays, I have to admit I was wrong. And my statement is they were right. I defended the Vikings all season long against what I thought was a lazy narrative of they're frauds. They're frauds. And I said, no, they won 13 games. They're not frauds. Now, they might not be great, but they're not frauds. And I took this into the opening round playoff game against the Giants at U.S. Bank Stadium, a home game. And I said, the national people are wrong. They're not frauds. They've got a chance. They got a great chance. And then, of course, they lose that game. And that was disheartening and too bad for them and us. But more importantly, that's not why I am making this statement on this Monday. I am making it because 75% of the games the past 2 days I thought were great. And then there was one that sucked. And that was the Giants 38-7 destruction. Dude. At the hands of the Philadelphia Eagles on Saturday, in which Daniel Jones looked like Daniel Jones, not like the guy that played and just picked apart the Vikings defense. And making it even worse is that 38-7 loss for Big Blue, who beat the Vikings, came on the 5-year anniversary of the Vikings 38-7 loss in the NFC Championship game in the same stadium against Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Pyle. I cannot defend the Vikings any longer. 13 wins, an NFC North title. Me, of all people, standing behind Kevin O'Connell and saying, onward and upward. The loss was bad. Saturday to me was worse.
Yeah, because watching pretty much all those games, you felt like the only two teams the Vikings may have had a shot against, including the AFC, were like the Jaguars and the Giants, right? If they got into a game again with the Jaguars and the Giants,
yeah,
it'd probably be pretty close. You know, they'd be punching. And then Trevor Lawrence kind of allows the Jaguars to punch up a level too.
Oh, yeah.
When he's dialed in. But it was very noticeable the gaps between the actual heavyweights in the NFC and the AFC and the Vikings. So I think I agree with you.
I can't anymore.
Yeah. I mean, even my opening statement dovetails right off Judd's, and it was the Vikings' loss to the Giants is now even more embarrassing. Because, I mean, we all thought that game was going to be close. And I know New York Giants fans, rightfully so, probably looked at the Vikings matchup in the wild card round and said, oh, perfect. That team, we only lost that team on a 62-yard field goal, and Danny Dimes was great in that game, too, in the regular season. But then when New York goes to Philadelphia and plays, which we also knew was a better team than them, but then for them to get whooped 38-7, Daniel Jones looking like the Daniel Jones that we've all kind of known, that loss now to me is way more embarrassing. Now, if the Vikings had won and they go into San Francisco, and if they lost 38-7, does this kind of cancel each other out? Does the take cancel each other out? I don't know. But I think looking at how the Giants played, to Judd's point, divisional round's my favorite weekend of the calendar football year, and I moved on to the Wild by halftime because I thought, this one's completely over with, and I'm not going to continue watching it much anymore. And looking at the box score and looking at the highlights, yeah, there was nothing about that game that makes me sit really, really well, and the loss of the Giants to me is much more embarrassing now after the whipping by the Eagles.
Yeah. If the Vikings had got whooped by San Fran, at least they would have gotten by the Giants. So I think it's worse.
Yeah, you would have felt like
you didn't even beat the Giants.
Yeah, you would have felt like okay, it would have been the same as 2019, sort of, except 19 they won the amount of games that they were supposed to, which is 10, right, or 11. No, they won 11 because they I think they won the last game of the season sitting starters. But would it feel different if, let's say, they had gone 10-7, which is what they were supposed to have gone, if luck hadn't fallen their way? And they get bounced, I guess then it feels a little bit more in line because the flaws would be more glaring in that they led to losses as opposed to these last-minute wins. All right, over on Purple Daily, we did trigger alert, trigger warning. We did talk about Kirk Cousins' contract a little bit. I know that ruffles people's feathers sometimes. But I asked fans on Twitter, and this thing got over 8,000 votes. What would you do if you were Kwesi? How would you approach the next 5 weeks leading up to the NFL free agency period? What would you do with Kirk Cousins entering the final year of his contract? Would you offer him a short extension, which is what he's been signing for 5 years? Just another year, maybe another 2 years, just a little short extension, likely for relatively top dollar. Would you just ride out the final year of his contract? Would you ask him to waive his no trade clause? Or would you sign him to a long-term extension through, like, age 40 and just cover the Viking for life? And my statement here is Vikings fans have spoken emphatically. 47% of people said, ride out the final year. 30% said, a short extension. 16% said, ask him to waive his no-trade clause. 7% said, give him a lifetime extension through, like, age 38, 39, 40. So if you add the write out final year and ask him to waive his no trade, around 60% of people say they're just kind of ready for it to be over. What do you make of that? And which of these four options, how would you sort of rank these four options? They're going to have to pick one in the next 5 weeks, by the way.
Yeah. Personally, I would, if I was them, I would ride the contract out. I think that they'll pick door two, which would be to extend him. The lifetime extension, of course, in my opinion, is not an option at all. The waive the no trade, I'm fine with him not doing that. I'm actually fine with Kirk coming back in 2023. Mm-hmm. So personally, I would go bring him back for the last year. My second one would be to do the short-term extension. My third one would be to have him waive the no trade. And my fourth and last one would go to a Viking for life because I just don't see the need for that.
See, I actually totally disagree with your ranking. This is great. I'm going to give you my rankings so we can compare. All right. My number one option, shocker, I know, would be to ask him to waive his no trade because if you already know he's 35 this summer. He's not going to be our guy. We need to plan for the future. The team has major cap issues. If you've already sort of decided you're going to ride him out anyways, if you could get something of value for him before he just walks for nothing, that would be the best case scenario. Part of the Vikings' problem the last couple of years, and maybe it was worth it because they won 13 games and it was fun and there was the Colts comeback and the Bills game. Maybe it was worth it. Mm-hmm. But they ignored a chance to collect draft capital for some of their veterans a year ago. Eric Kendricks had trade value a year ago. Adam Thielen had trade value a year ago. Harrison Smith. Dalvin Cook had more trade value. Like, I don't know how many of these guys have anything more than, like, fourth-round trade value at this point, if any trade value. So can you really just let your veteran players who used to be Pro Bowlers erode, fall off a cliff, and leave for nothing Well, you're stuck paying a salary cap penalty and bill because you kicked the can down the road. If you've decided that on Cousins, couldn't you just respectfully say, dude, thank you for the 5 years. One of the greatest quarterbacks in Vikings history, which isn't like the most prominent list.
Right.
But we're gonna accelerate more aggressively getting younger and clearing cap space. We're not going to sign you to an extension. We can find your new home for you. You can go in with your agent. Like, I would, if you're going to ride it out, you should explore trades to get a second round pick or something.
You should, but your bosses won't let you. That's the problem.
The Wilves?
Yeah.
The Wilves.
I mean, do you really think any personnel guy worth his salt looked at that roster and said, oh, I love this roster? Kendricks and Thielen. And
well, they
Cook.
Did win 13 games.
They did, but they will now turn around, especially the Wilves, and say, see, it sort of worked. And you'll be like, did it really? And they'll be like, yes, we were very competitive. And as the first step in the Kevin O'Connell era, we won a division title. Like, this is where we get into a very slippery slope. And like, the Wilves will say, okay, if you're going to have Kirk waive his no trade, who's your quarterback and how immediate can that guy win? Because, again, this administration ownership has never shown any inkling that they are willing to purposely take a large step back. They
yeah,
accidentally and, done it, but not
yeah, but now it's like it's staring you in the face so aggressively that you need to get younger in some certain areas. And so of these four options, two of them involve saying goodbye either now or later. So I'd rather do it now and get draft picks than later. So that's why I would approach him. And the other two options are extensions, and I disagree with you again. If you're going to extend him, I'd rather do like a four-year extension, move cap out of 2023 and 24 and into 25, 26, and just free up as much free agency money as possible to find those 26-year-old dudes, a center, a healthy center, you know, maybe a slot cornerback or something. I'd rather do that. So my options are, number one, ask him to waive the no trade. Number two would be ride out the final year. Number three would be a long extension that gives me more cap flexibility. And number four would be a short extension, which is the same thing you've been doing for 5 years. I do not have any interest in a short extension anymore.
I don't want him around for long term. Yeah. I don't care what I do with my cap.
Yeah,
I need to be done at some point. And I think the most... I think the path that they're going to choose is extension through 24. I will be very pleasantly surprised if they say, it's done. And that's gonna be a lot of chefs, man. A lot of chefs in that kitchen making that call.
And that's the other thing. If, again, this is all the reason why this is so interesting is I think it surprises people how quickly this stuff happens in the offseason. The league year starts in six weeks.
Oh, combine's right around the corner.
I think they moved it to early March, the combine.
Yeah, but I mean, so we are going to be there. And that's where the secret talks start with free agents.
Oh, it's already happening.
That's
now.
Not a legal tampering window. That's an illegal tampering window that opens.
You're just getting
night,
a couple drinks at the bar
St.
in
Elmo's,
Indianapolis. You know?
The Marriott. Well, I've had some drinks there. That's a great place to hang.
Okay, Dex, are you ranking these? Or
yeah, I'll rank
your,
these.
What's your...
The for me, it's ride it out. Right out the final year. Second is to ask them to waive the no trade. I just think it's too complicated. Like, are you going to ask them to waive it? Can you get a deal that's done in principle, but then Kirk says, I don't want to do that, and then it falls through?
You would essentially have him and his agent, I think, spearhead the process, right?
Just green light
it. Teams to get an extension.
They would want the extension, yep.
Yeah.
Third option would be the short to 1 to 2 year extension. And the last one is the 3 year extension. I have no interest in this guy being the long-term option at quarterback. I think it's the writing on the wall with the void years also that's in here after this season. They are in position to ride this out. And if he's not willing to play ball, then okay, you and your agent who are incredible at working contracts, get together and say, we're going to start orchestrating a trade then. And what teams are you interested in talking with? And then where can we go from there? That would be my options.
Okay, so if you let Kirk ride out the final year, that would mean in the first 2 years of Kwesi running this front office, in a competitive rebuild, quote unquote,
yeah,
that you let Cousins, Kendricks, Thielen, Harrison Smith, and maybe who am I missing? Dalvin Cook. all erode and walk or be cut for no draft capital, as opposed to trading them before they hit the cliff and getting first, second. I mean, the Seahawks traded Russell Wilson for a boat, right? Didn't the Colts get 2 second-round picks for Carson Wentz?
Conditional first, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, again, if you're going to say goodbye to these players, like, you need to do it a year or two before it makes total sense. You got to
I get what you're saying, but there's been nothing that we've seen that leads us to believe that they would take that path. I would be shocked. I would be absolutely shocked, because that would get
aggressive. Let's stop
too.
Wondering why they can't build a Super Bowl contender then.
Yeah, no, they want to be competitive. We talked about it last week. They want to be competitive. 13, I'm telling you right now, in Jersey right now, somewhere, a pack of wolves are saying 13 wins and a division title.
Dude, it's such an unserious franchise if they wind up continuing forward with, like, a 33-year-old Adam Thielen. We'll just keep kicking money down the road. He still has some gas in the tank. Like, guys, be more ruthless.
I think the personnel department's hands are tied behind their back to a certain extent where to what you're saying, Phil, the erosion is just going to have to take place.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like it, but...
No. All right, Judd, you're up next here. Your next statement is presented by the official sports bar of the sports dad, Judd Zolgad.
And that, of course, is the Park Tavern in SLP here, the official sports bar and the official place for fun. Look at that right now.
Bowling, who shot this B-roll?
Drink. Look, who? This is outstanding. Somebody did a great job. Oh, wait, that was sports dad as well. You know why? Because I stopped by the Park Tavern to have a couple of beers. But that is just an illustration of all the fun with bowling, two bars that you can have in the community here in St. Louis Park for more than 42 years. It's open 365 days a year. And if you're looking to plan a group outing, perhaps it's going to be your wife's birthday, anniversary, your kid's birthday. Guys, be a hero at home by doing the planning. Tell your wife, you know what, I got this. And then go in a different room, pick up the phone and call 952-929-6810 or go to parktavern.net and give them a call or just simply book a party. I'm talking a party of 40, 50 people. Park Tavern has seen it all. That is nothing for them. It's easy. Cheryl does a great job, and that's the best part. Park Tavern will do all the work, and you will be a hero at home. Parktavern.net, 952-929-6810. Sip a Surly, where Sports Dad does. Park Tavern, St. Louis Park.
All right, Judd, what's your next statement?
Okay, my next statement is this. Build it strong and build it fast. I implore you to recall the games that we watched, not the Giants so much, but the rest of the teams, and especially like the Bengals or Dallas or San Francisco, and look at what they did defensively. Look at how they swarmed to the football. Look at the lines of these good, good teams. The Bengals had 3/5 of their offensive line out, and those guys kicked ass. You know why? Because they're strong, they're intimidating, and defenses are fast now. I would love, I highly doubt that this exists, but wouldn't it be fun to have like a speed ranking on defenses? Because the Vikings would have been 32nd. Like if you had a closing the gap speed and like an overall statistic to show that, think about how slow the Vikings were, the linebackers were. Think about all the space that existed. And then think about what we saw from the Bengals. Hell, the Bills, too. How quickly they got to guys.
Yeah.
And how strong those teams were up front. And if intimidating is not the right word, it's close to it. Like, look at those defenses where they are. And then look at how passive and slow the Vikings were. Build it strong and build it fast.
Yeah, I think that so that data does exist from like NFL Next Gen stats, but I don't know how much they quantify it for the public. I don't think there's like a leaderboard for now. Baseball makes all that stuff transparent. You can see like who the fastest players are and player tracking data. The NBA. I don't know to what extent the NFL makes that stuff widely public, but eye test. Yeah, I mean, just watch, dude. There was a linebacker who was the. Was it the Niners linebacker that literally ran 40 yards down the field step for step with CeeDee Lamb to break up a pass in that game?
Unbelievable play.
And Eric Kendricks used to do that stuff too, like five or six years ago. But, dude, they have a light. And meanwhile, Jordan Hicks and Eric Kendricks now, as 30 and 31-year-old guys, have a hard time keeping up with mobile quarterbacks and really any tight end running across the field, let alone CeeDee Lamb 40 yards from the line of scrimmage. So
yes,
just getting faster should help this defense. I think it's one of those scenarios where sometimes if you have a veteran player that can play fast because he sees what's happening, that maybe you'd rather have him. But I think we've sort of crossed that line of, no, you just need some faster guys here that are a little more spry and young.
Strength, too, though. Like up front. These teams that are really good are intimidating up front. The Vikings weren't. They should have been. They could have been. But they weren't. So, yeah, I think the blueprint for the makeover of the defense is right there. Just do it. Work on it. Get younger. Get faster. I don't need veteran guys that can't run anymore.
My next statement, after watching specifically the Bengals and Joe Burrow being cool as a cucumber, delivering darts, and then in his post-game interview being him, my statement is, I want a quarterback who doesn't give a bleep. And Joe Burrow does not give a bleep. He's asked point blank, I believe, by Tracy Wolfs in that post game. Oh, so what do you think? You know, they got to move that game that was going to be in Atlanta. Better send those refunds. And that was it. There was no other pontificating answer. He was just cut and dry of, yeah, better send those refunds. But then obviously his play and just the way he goes about leading that team. Man, I love watching that dude play quarterback. I mean, Pat Mahomes is a magician. Josh Allen, when he's also playing at his peak, is really fun to watch. I think Joe Burrow is right up there now with Patrick Mahomes in terms of one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and one of the best quarterbacks to watch. I know they were also saying that in the postgame that if you wanted to say last year was a fluke for the Bengals to make that run of the Super Bowl, that argument is now invalid. They start 0-2. They then go on a run where they only lose a few games the rest of the season. Now they're on the doorstep of going to back-to-back Super Bowls with a head coach who has, yes, even turned my attention and said, okay, this guy is pretty damn good with a generationally good quarterback. It's been impressive, and I want the quarterback who does not give a bleep. I know they don't grow on trees either, but watching Joe Burrow play football, it makes me very envious for the Vikings to have a guy like that.
Meanwhile, on the other end of the quarterback spectrum, the Dallas Cowboys official Twitter account sent out this.
Yeah, that's great.
This is the official Cowboys Twitter account. Dak Prescott gave away the ball twice in the narrow loss to the 49ers in a matchup the Cowboys had a chance to win if they didn't again generate self-inflicted wounds. There's no link or anything. It's just a Twitter post. It's just a tweet.
That's great.
Well, did they forget the link to an article or something?
Oh, my God.
The team account just... Did Jerry Jones
Jerry
went
Jones
in and said,
probably pissed and told him to...
Someone...
That.
What's that Bring social... Him,
yeah. Bring me that social media gal.
Spitter. Yeah. Twitter.
There's a fighting chance that's exactly what happened.
What do you think? It's always a transition when, in the 90s, Dan Marino and John Elway and Joe Montana, when they bow out. Like, that was kind of the 80s and early 90s Mount Rushmore. And then Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and maybe Brett Favre. Like, I feel like the league is in amazing hands right now with Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, although he's at this point kind of been proven to be a level, but Trevor Lawrence is going to be in that mix.
Yeah, coming down the pike here. I like him a lot.
But even like Jalen Hurts, and there's so many dudes right now up and down the league. You get a little nervous, like, who's all right? Well, Tom Brady's getting old. Aaron Rodgers is getting old. Who's going to be the fun must-watch quarterbacks? There's about 10 teams that are kind of putting garbage out there, but this is a pretty amazing top-heavy list of star young quarterbacks right now.
The thing about Burrow that just astounds me, because he's not like super fast, but his ability to navigate the pocket and to be athletic when it matters, it's mind-boggling. Like because he's not, he's not hurt. He's not just going to take off all of the time. But one, he can, and two, his footwork in the pocket, like, he makes it look so simple that it's like, well, yeah, of course that's how he's going to move in the pocket. Oh, no. Watch other quarterbacks. That's very, very difficult. I mean, his ability to sense pressure, like, he has every intangible that you could possibly want.
Yeah. Yep. And I think there's just something about him that makes everyone else more confident, more comfortable. You just see that dude walking around the way that he does. There's just, it's something that's hard to quantify.
It's what
on,
Declan
like,
said.
Football
he,
reference.
He seems like I wouldn't say he doesn't care. I would say this. Right. Nothing phases him.
Yes.
Yep.
Nothing phases the guy.
Yeah.
That's an incredible thing. And plus, he seems like a decent kid.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't come off as a jerk.
Until he gets arrested for meth possession or something. You never know these days.
And he's got all his teeth.
Well, so far. Judd, do you have any final Viking statements before we get into some Twins discussion today?
Yes, I have one more. And it's this. We don't miss him. I'm talking about Stefon Diggs. Not only did you upgrade, because you did. I know it's incredible, but you did.
I'd take him.
I would take him, too. But, you know, didn't we see it again yesterday? He and his lifelong buddy, Josh Allen, this is my guy, this is my quarterback. And, of course, he's on the sidelines, arms flailing. One, it's a snow globe game, okay? It's not like it's real simple. Two, he's all, you know, pissed off again. I guess he basically, at the end of the game, ran up the runway, got his stuff and left. Mm-hmm. And a veteran guy who was on the practice squad dragged him back into the locker room briefly, and then he just left again. It's like, you're still pulling this crap, dude? Yeah. Like, these star turns. And, you know, the one thing that, Phil, we used to talk about way back when on the radio show was that Thielen at the time and Diggs didn't seem like divas. Like, they seemed low maintenance. And somewhere along the way, I don't know if it was the miracle, I don't know if it was his frustration that got him traded. Somewhere along the way, Stefon Diggs has turned into, and he's still damn good, but he has turned into a diva.
Well, okay, and if he's frustrated in Buffalo now, where is your next move?
Yeah.
Are you going to force your way to the Bengals? Or?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd take him back. He wants to come back and play next to Justin Jefferson.
Thielen.
But I don't know how that's going to happen.
But, I mean, I'm watching what we used to see from him and this now, it's like, why'd you go there? You've now become the receiver who is too good for, you know, you got to get me the ball. What are you doing? And I understand you're frustrated, but does gesticulating on the sidelines really help your cause?
He's a highly emotional guy. Yeah, Josh Allen didn't even look up at him because he probably does it all the time. I think he just has... I don't know. He just has a short fuse when things are not going his way. He's a little bit of a front runner in that way.
Yes.
But I would still take him in the foxhole. I don't think he's a toxic, like Terrell Owens kind of a guy. I think he just gets super charged up in the moment.
He wants to win.
Like, I'd rather have the Jefferson. But Jefferson could start doing this at some point too.
Of course he could.
Your fourth, this sixth year in the league, and you're like, what the hell are we doing, guys?
Mm-hmm. Of course he could, but I'm just saying I'm tired of this crap.
I do have one more quick one, then we'll talk some Twins here. Pour one out for Brett Maher's kicking career. I know that he came back and made a couple field goals, but
dude,
that extra point that got blocked.
I think
we're dealing with a Chuck Knoblauch situation here that now he has to sit on this all off season.
Do you remember? The first game, so I think it was the first game after the Seahawks debacle when Blair Walsh missed. I think the Vikings opened the next season in Tennessee. And there was a kick where they tried to say the wind got it. But Blair Walsh literally had a kick that took a left turn towards downtown Nashville.
Yeah.
And it's like that ball is this is like, unless there is a gust of wind that's a hurricane. That ball that got blocked, he was actually fortunate it got blocked.
Yeah.
It was going to miss by so much. It would have been worse to not have it blocked. So,
at least when it gets blocked, you can kind of justify to yourself, like, oh, that was totally going to sneak in if that guy is. I'm going to blame the guard. The left guard needs to get a better base.
And you know what? If that doesn't get blocked and he doesn't miss it, and there was a field goal too. Oh, they went for it in the first half on fourth down, and they got it. But then Dak threw a pick shortly after that. They're up 10-6 at the half.
Mm-hmm.
So like that changed the game.
Yeah. Poor guy. All right, gentlemen, let's talk some Twins here. Some Twin statements here. A Friday trade that went down. We thought maybe we should do an emergency episode. And like, I don't know.
Eh.
We'll see.
did we really think that? I just saw a couple of tweets saying, are you going to do one? And I'm like,
the Twins need to earn our emergency episodes back. We gave you one for the Carlos Correa, but that's not my first statement, by the way, that the Twins need to earn our emergency episodes.
Okay, you're done now. Not that
question. But here's my first statement, okay? This looks like a good trade for the Twins, but I am not a doctor. So I just want to preface by saying that. We've been burned in the past by saying, this looks like a good trade. And then you Google, you know, Tyler Malley's shoulder or something. Now, Pablo Lopez, much like all pitchers, has had some stuff before, but nothing imminent, it looks like. He's a rock solid. So the trade was, for anyone that just like wasn't paying attention to this from Friday through the weekend or you were caught out watching football, the Twins traded the American League batting champion Luis Arraez, who has, I believe, 3 years of team control left, right? And they receive a good solid middle of the rotation, a good solid number three starter on a playoff team, potentially. Pablo Lopez, 27 years old, going to be. And also the Marlins' fifth best prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, infielder Jose Salas, and then another prospect in outfielder Byron Chirio. So you're getting, I think, Arraez for Pablo Lopez, kind of similar in that you're trading a pretty good solid player. Arraez is a good batting average on base guy, doesn't hit for power, not really fast in his position's first base where his offense doesn't really rise up as much. So I think you're trading a good position player with some team control for a good starting pitcher with some team control, and you're getting a couple good prospects back. So it's not really about money. It's just kind of a baseball trade. And the Twins feel like they need to continue to add starting pitching depth because they've been unable to produce it from within themselves. So on paper, looks like a decent baseball trade unless you are in love with Luis Arraez and think that he can now be a modern Tony Gwynn going forward or something, which I don't know that this is repeatable. I think he had a good pop-up season, but what do you guys think?
If it pleases the panel, I would like to recklessly speculate on a Monday instead of waiting until Thursday.
Reckless speculation.
Thank you. So the interesting thing about this is there was, what was it, Dan Hayes in The Athletic, but a month or so ago, perhaps a little bit more than a month ago, it was pointed out, and I think it probably came from informed people, that Sonny Gray, Tyler Malley, and Kenta Maeda are all free agents after 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And that Sonny Gray, because the previous, because the last two on my list, of course, have been hurt because the Twins, whoops, got guys hurt, that Sonny Gray might be shopped at some point in time here. That could be the trade deadline in July. But, you know, right now, you've got Gray, Ryan, Malley, Maeda, Lopez, and then your own guys who you like some of, okay? What if we aren't done yet? And I'm not saying this would be popular, but recklessly speculating, what if we were to see Sonny Gray packaged with a guy that they would that they want to trade but can't, Max Kepler, in spring training in a trade, which would now... I mean, I wouldn't love that trade, but it does seem like you've created a plethora of starters, assuming that they aren't hurt still.
Well,
you've created a long list of starters that gives you some potential wiggle room to get out of a contract when you know that you're probably not going to pay that guy in 2024 and beyond. Thoughts?
Yeah. Here's my problem, I guess. If you trade Sonny Gray... And I'd need to know, are you getting major leaguers back or are you getting prospect capital?
I would guess a little bit of both, perhaps, depending on what you trade.
Okay.
But yes.
I just feel like you're kind of spinning plates here.
Yeah.
You know what? So you're how are they getting better than what they've been the last couple of years? So keeping Correa doesn't make you better.
Yep.
It maintains you, right?
Yep.
Okay, so swapping out Sonny Gray for Pablo Lopez doesn't make you better. It maintains you.
Uh-huh.
You need to get better to simplify this. So that's what I'm curious about. And maybe some of it is Buxton stays healthier and that, and maybe some of your pitchers with a new trainer aren't going down with injuries. You know, maybe you trust a couple of these pitchers to go a little deeper in the games and preserve your bullpen more often. But What are we, you know, Kent, the Kenta Maeda thing too, A, zero trade value there right now.
Yeah,
like,
no.
The guy hasn't pitched in 2 years.
Yep.
And he's like 35.
Yeah.
He turns 35 on April 11th coming off Tommy John surgery. So we're not, this isn't the guy that almost won the Cy Young Award, you know, 3 years ago anymore.
Correct.
So I would prefer them. They're in a win-now window. You got Carlos Correa at prime, Byron Buxton prime. Who knows how long he's going to be able to even play, right? You got a couple other guys that probably are going to be around still and in their prime, like Polanco. You got, what's his name? My guy, Joey Gallo. Like, your team is kind of ready-made now with the core position players that you have. I'd rather them just keep Sonny Gray at this point. And if you need to trade him at the trade deadline, if things are going poorly, then trade him right at the trade deadline. But I would
that's
start,
a possibility, too. Yeah.
I'd start the season with Sonny Gray, Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, and then, you know, probably Tyler Malley. Yeah. I don't know if Chris Paddock's going to be probably not ready until
half
of the year.
Yeah.
So Maeda, six-man rotation, I guess, and maybe Bailey Ober or something. I would start there, give myself a chance to start hot. And then if I needed to make some trades, I'd make some trades.
I think if Paddock comes back, they said September. So I'm throwing it out there. The Twins have operated in very mysterious ways before. I'm recklessly speculating. This is a safe space. Don't shoot the messenger.
That's fair. It's always a safe space.
Reckless speculation.
Yeah. Okay, my first statement. I am one step closer to being gaslit by the Twins. I am one step closer to be fully back in and gaslit by the Twins. One step closer. I'm not all in yet. But this is a classic Twins move. They need pitching. And I like Pablo Lopez. To Phil's point, if he stays healthy, he probably is the best arm in your rotation. He's a solid number 2-3. In classic Twins fashion, though, again, they're trading for him to be the ace of a staff that, again, on a good staff, Pablo Lopez slots in more like a number 3, potentially a number 2. This team can't pitch. They needed pitching, like, really, really badly. And although there's still some great options in Bailey Ober and Louis Varland and in-house options that they have never developed that turned into aces, they need to take steps to be better at pitching. Trading Luis Arraez, probably at his peak, for an above-average pitcher, plus a little bit of prospect capital, a pretty solid trade on paper. I agree with Phil's opening statement. But you need a little bit more pitching. Get a little bit more pitching. And old Dex tweets probably trots back to Target Field a little bit more in 2023. But I need to see a little bit more pitching moves before I'm kind of brought back ball in on the 2023 Twins.
This gives them, the way the Twins get an ace is one of two ways. There's develop a guy, get a guy in the Rule 5 or something like Johan. You very rarely find an ace in the Rule 5 draft, but develop a guy from within like a Johan or trade for a guy who's 19 years old like a, you know, Frankie Liriano, and do it that way. And they've had a hell of a time, basically since Johan left. Mm-hmm. They haven't. Berríos, for a minute, looked like he might be that guy, but he never, like, fully reached his max potential. So they've literally been looking for that type of an ace for 15 years. The other thing they could do, because their rotation is at least set up depth-wise, unless they trade from it, like I said, to be competitive. This is probably the best the rotation has looked on paper and the deepest it's looked. But they don't have a number one, like Declan said. But maybe if they start off well, this is a situation where you could go get a rent-a-ace. You know, whoever the three-month rental is, overpay a little bit at the trade deadline and just ride that guy from, you know, August, September to October. But the thing is, you got to start the season for the first 3 months and show that you're a winning, healthy baseball team before you can think about doing other things in July.
The key word being healthy.
Right.
The poor new trainer might have the most pressure of anyone brought in.
That's a good statement.
Forget the
right
players. Forget the players. Forget the pitchers. The trainer, it's like, keep Buxton out there for 154. The guy's like, I quit. All right. Here's my next statement about the Twins. Do your job. Do your job. And I am looking at you, Derek Falvey. You were brought here in October 2016. So you've had since the 2017 season, all right? You were brought here as a pitching whisperer. you are going to unearth really good bargains that were going to be fantastic. And most importantly, you are going to replenish this franchise with plenty of young arms who would be ascending left and right now. We would be looking at young men coming up and throwing a multitude of innings and pitching great. I'm going to read to you from a Star Tribune piece that appeared in Sunday's paper about the pitching and the philosophy now, okay?
Yeah.
And see if this rubs you the wrong way, because it certainly did me. Only five pitchers drafted by current management have started a game for the Twins, and only Bailey Ober, a 12th-round pick in 2017, seems assured of a role in 2023.
Wow.
Falvey was asked about this. Remember, the pitching Mr. Miyagi, I can find pitching. I can find you pitching. It's going to be, this is the difference. This is the between the margins thing where we are going to separate ourselves from the rest of teams that maybe don't spend a ton. All right. I read to you from the Star Tribune, the quote about pitching. I don't care where they come from. We need really good starters and we need really good pitchers. Some of those are going to be free agent signings, some of those are going to be trades, and some of those will also, hopefully, being the key word, be from development. But the goal here is to continue to deepen the starting rotation and pitching staff however we can do it. Dude. Okay. Dude. Go ahead, Phil.
So there. Okay. Yeah. He knows, though. I think he's just sort of covering his tracks publicly, right? When he says, I don't care where they come from, there is a huge distinction here. If you had been developing pitchers for the last 5 years that were popping up into your rotation, guys that you drafted or guys that were international free agent signings, you know, your 16-year-old kids, your 18-year-old, whatever, you wouldn't have to trade or face the conundrum of potentially trading a 25-year-old on-base machine in Luis Arraez with 3 years of team control left to get a number three starter. Wouldn't you rather have five options that you've developed from within and hold on to Luis Arraez for the next 3 years? Right? And they, this is where like ownership comes in a little bit. I think people go overboard with the cheap pull ads angle because there is no like real there's revenue sharing in baseball. It's not like the other sports where everyone's kind of operating on the same playing field revenue wise. So could ownership go out and say, screw it, like kind of like they did with Carlos Correa on the six-year deal and just outbid the next team by $40 million? But it's so risky to go sign free agent pitchers who usually don't hit the market till they're 29 or 30. Their arms are ticking time bombs. The best chance you have to keep a guy healthy and to get value is to develop him arms, put him out on your major league team between ages 23 and 29, and let somebody else pay for his Tommy John surgery when he's 30 or his frayed labrum or whatever, right?
Correct.
So when he says, I don't care where they come from, one of the ways, like if it's free agency, trade, or develop from within, one of those ways is incredibly more valuable and better for your baseball club, especially when you're a mid to low market spending team.
Right.
And the fact that they have failed in that regard means that they have to then trade valuable assets like Arraez to get more pitching. So I think he knows that. He's a smart enough
guy.
But
he's failing. But he's miserably. I mean, this would be akin to if in 5 years Kevin O'Connell has not found a QB. You were brought here largely to do that.
Yeah.
Derek Falvey, he came here. His resume said at the very top, Cleveland Baseball Club, whisperer of finding pitching. Corey Kluber was on that list. Think about they basically are playing with a guy who is known for, or supposedly, going and getting pitching. They are basically playing dartboard pitching, which is they throw a dart at a board, and it's like, we hit Lopez. Yeah. Now we hit Paddock. Now we hit Malley.
And the other thing, too, is they're taking, because they're so, rightfully so, desperate to find pitching, then they start to take risks on guys that have had shoulder problem, Tyler Malley, or partially torn UCL in Chris Paddock. If they had a plentiful pipeline over 5 years, going back a year ago on the Chris Paddock trade, if they had a plentiful pipeline of good young pitchers, are they really going to, that trade didn't like derail the franchise or anything, but are they going to take a risk like that on a guy that literally had to be sat with a partially torn elbow ligament 3 months, 4 months before you made that trade. No, they're taking more risks because they feel pressure to do so because there aren't guys like this coming up over the last 6 years.
And I saw something, I forget where I read it after the trade about how the Twins now, you know, like some of these young pitchers are starting to come up. It's been 5+ years.
And it sometimes takes, like, when you draft, especially when you draft high school arms, like 18-year-olds, or you sign some of these international kids are like 16, 17 when you sign them. It is a 4, 5, 6 year process, but they've also drafted college arms that are 21, 22, 23 when you get them into your system.
Five is what they have so far.
Yeah. Anyway, it's bad. It's bad.
Do your job.
Back to a season ticket holder, future season ticket holder, Declan.
Yeah. My next statement is, don't tell me you're going to miss a rise this much. So when he was traded, the outpouring of Twitter and tweets that I saw from people that I follow, and then even, you know, on my tweet deck, I have, you know, hashtag twin, so I get a bunch of just flooding of fans or media or anyone that has that hashtag. Oh, man, I'm really going to miss going to the ballpark and watching those Luis Ariz at-bats. Is that what really is going to prevent you from not going to Target Field every day now because they traded Luis Ariz? Like, the Twins haven't put out much of a product that's worth going to. It's really difficult to justify paying a lot of money to get into the ballpark, to buy beers and buy hot dogs. Is trading Luis Ariz really going to prevent you from now not going and boycotting the 2023 Minnesota Twins? I call baloney on that. It's expensive to go to a ball game. Luis Ariz, in my opinion, is not the can't-miss player that I can't wait to see when I walk into Target Field. So yeah. I think it's
more like there's already a bunch of reasons that people don't go to the games because the attendance was way down last year. This is just another reason for them to not go to the games. Correa wasn't the attraction, maybe. And Correa also, he's not like your Bryce Harper superstar. Or, you know, there's 5 or 6 players. Mike Trout is one of them, too, where you're going to go because you want to see that guy hit a 480-foot moonshot, right? I think Carlos Correa's value is a little more subtle. Like, he's going to play rock-solid, fundamental shortstop, and he's going to get on base and hit singles and doubles and maybe run into 20 home runs. So, and Ariz was kind of that way, too, right? If you just love to go to the game and why he's a very nuanced player. If you love to go watch a guy work a pitcher for 9 pitches, check his swing a couple times, and he was a fun guy to watch if you're a hardcore baseball fan. But to Dex's point, it wasn't like Kirby Puckett back in the 90s or Torrey Hunter, some of these dudes that are actual attractions, Johan Santana. So I'm with you. Buxton's more of an attraction than Luis Ariz.
I tweeted that exact thing, though. I'm going to miss him. I'm not going to boycott games, but I'm going to miss this. This sport has become so, it feels like, especially at the plate, cookie cutter in its approach. Because they all, you know, launch angle and they get with their hitting coach who tells them some Einstein theory of relativity of how to hit. And here's what Newton's physics say about what you should do in the box. The one thing about Ariz from an old school baseball standpoint, his at-bats were fun. He literally spit on pitches and then shook his head, that's a ball.
Yeah.
Like, it's stuff like that. I miss that stuff. So, yeah, I'm not boycotting, but I did enjoy the fact that he had a very different approach from most people in 2023.
Yeah.
I like that.
So, yeah, one more thing on Ariz, too. It's a concern, I guess, I have is that the thing that he's great at, batting average is one, but just getting on base. He was their best on-base guy. And if you take him out, and let's see here, Gio Urshela was pretty good at getting on base for the Twins last year, and he's gone. They don't have a long list of guys that are great at just getting on base, be it through working counts or base hits or whatever. The only two guys, let's see, so there's the only three guys with an OBP of 325 or better that are coming back this year are Carlos Correa, Jorge Polanco, and Jose Miranda. Everyone else has a lot of work to do in the getting on base department, which actually brings me to my next statement. I think this, let's call it a 3-year window for the Twins, 3 to 5 year window, because they're not rebuilding. They're in a win now window, despite having come nowhere near the playoffs the last couple of years, right? Like, they are not rebuilding. They're trying to win now.
Yep.
So as important as Correa is and Buxton and this pitching staff, I think the two players that this whole thing hinges on the most, are they going to make a step? Are they going to actually compete? Are they going to win a playoff game? I think it's Alex Kirilloff and Royce Lewis. Because if those two guys are healthy and progressing and playing at the level that they're projected to be at as young players, they would be like two of your four best position players and hitters, but they can't stay healthy. Royce Lewis for a number of different ailments, knee and everything else.
Yeah,
and Alex Kirilloff is down to like a last gasp, desperate wrist surgery to see if he can play Major League Baseball for, you know, the next 5 or 10 years. But if those two guys are clicking and they're playing 120, 30, 40 games or whatever it is, and everything else starts to fall into place, this thing could, they could be a dangerous team. But if not, it kind of wipes out two pillar cornerstone guys that you really were going to rely on for the next decade.
They can be a dangerous team potentially if, much like the Vikings, their personnel fits their philosophy. Because like the bullpen is going to have to be, if they're going to continue to do what they did last year, that bullpen's going to have to be damn good. And it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
Where is Royce going to play here? Third base? And Miranda, if Kirilloff can't stay healthy, he'll just shift to first base?
I could see Miranda being a first baseman, but Joey Gallo's good. There's some position flex here. Joey Gallo's first base, DH, some corner outfield. Miranda could be DH, first base, third base. Royce Lewis, whenever he's ready, could be center field, backup, shortstop, and third base.
I got news for you. Joey Gallo is going to play a ton of games in center field.
Or backup center field, yeah.
It's not a backup. It's a co-thing right now. Seriously. I mean, Byron Buxton, come on. I'd love to see him play a ton of games, but I just don't see it.
Well, yeah, he never plays 100 games.
And then if Kirilloff actually, if his arm doesn't disintegrate and fall off, he can play right field a little bit too. Because I think Kepler's gone, right?
They've been trying to trade him, right? And at this point, he's also just been, you know, God, we talk about Sano and the disappointment and some of these other guys. I mean, Max Kepler, from what he did in 2019.
Yes.
And what he was projected to be, he was part of this young nucleus, the contract extension they gave him, which didn't break the bank, but it was like a vote of confidence that we believe in you for the next 7 years.
Ian Polanco.
Whew. He's got a glove. He can cover some ground and he can do some things in the outfield. But Max Kepler is going to turn 30 years old in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think they can get a thing. I think the problem is they've aggressively shopped him, is my guess, and they can't get a thing for him.
He would actually be, and you've been begging for this for years, who's your fourth outfielder? Can Max Kepler at this stage in his career is a perfect fourth outfielder on a good team.
Just a guy
that, yep, a guy that plays 100 games. He pinch hits. He's a late inning defensive replacement, and he starts like half the games because of injury or whatever.
Yep. He's great in right. Center field, he's nah.
No, but he could. But if you needed a guy to come in and play some center for like 2 or 3 weeks, as a fourth outfielder, he can make it work.
I prefer to trade him.
Hmm. Any other final Twins thoughts from you guys here?
I'm good.
No.
You guys are good. You got it all off your chest.
Yeah, on my chest now. Then the next trade, we can have another Twins conversation. It'd be great.
I'll miss him. Louis, I'm going to miss you. So screw Declan. He might not. I'm going to miss your at-bats.
I will too.
I'm going to miss your joy in the box. I'm going to miss your Rod Carew impersonations.
I will too. He was a fun player to watch. He was a thinking baseball fan's player to watch. Yes.
I miss big league ball players in the box whose stances and tendencies can be repeated by kids playing schoolyard baseball.
I think the Tom Emanski training videos from the 90s just launched a whole new player,
in
a
the
whole
80s,
new wave of players with the same batting.
We
stance.
Had like Johnny Walkenfuss. We had Glenn Borgman.
Johnny Walkenfuss. Yeah, kids.
We had all these guys, Cecil Cooper, all these different stances, Brian Downing. And now it's just a cookie cutter approach with by Harvard guys who became hitting coaches, as Royce likes to say.
Come back tomorrow to hear the sports dad yelling at clouds and listing random 80s baseball players.
Literally, get
Mackie
off my
Judd.
Front lawn, because that's where I played summer of sixth grade. Get off my front lawn so I can play my damn baseball game.
All right, we need to get sports dad his meds here.
I built
and we'll
a
see you.
Mount. It was very cool.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.